The documentary, once the preserve of public service television, is the cinema and theatre form of the moment. Films such as Fahrenheit 9/11 and Super Size Me compete with Hollywood fiction, while theatre has taken up the topical political challenge with, most recently, a staged version of The Hutton Inquiry, Guantanamo, and David Hare's account of railway negligence, The Permanent Way, at the National Theatre. Now Hare has steamed onto the Olivier stage in a vehicle which looks a lot like documentary, but is in fact a play. Stuff happens. Hare is already known for his State of the Nation plays, Murmuring Judges, Racing Demon and Absence of War, and an earlier personal foray into the Middle East, the documentary monologue Via Dolorosa. The title Stuff Happens is taken from a dismissive answer given by Donald Rumsfeld at a press conference in April 2003 when he was asked about looting in Baghdad after American bombing raids. "Freedom is untidy," he added. The play deals mainly with the run-up to the Iraq War. Verifiable sources are used where possible, but private meetings between George W., Condoleezza Rice and Colin Powell, or telephone conversations between Bush and Blair, are imagined. The staging is stark. A cast of 22, mainly men, people the stage with a variety of characters and points of view. Speeches are given, as they were, news conferences replicated, UN meetings revisited. Alex Jennings plays Bush, Nicholas Farrell Blair, Adjoa Ando, the indispensable Condi Rice, and American actor Joe Morton, the dove Colin Powell, with Desmond Barrett as Dick Cheney and Dermot Crowley as Rumsfeld, making a monstrous double act. Stuff Happens is directed by Nicholas Heitner and is part of the Olivier's Travelex £10 season. My name's Heather Neal. With me to discuss Stuff Happens for Theatre Voice are Matt Wolfe, theatre critic of Variety magazine, Charles Spencer, theatre critic of The Daily Telegraph, and David Benedict, culture critic for Bloomberg. Matt, do you think that this hybrid form, this mixture of documentary and drama, is suitable for this kind of content? Do we know where Hare begins and ends? Does it matter whether we know where Hare begins and ends?
Yeah, I think it probably is. I mean, you know, I suppose the question that hangs over this theatrical experience is it a play? And, you know, that's something we could debate, and I'm sure we'll debate. I'm not entirely sure it is a play, but what I am sure of is that, to me anyway, it was a fascinating theatrical experience and one that I was very glad to have had. Not least because, I mean, I know a lot of people say, well, there's nothing here that you couldn't have got if you've conscientiously followed the press the last several years. The thing is, who conscientiously follows the press to this degree? And having said that as well, it's nice to have it filleted in 3 hours so that you actually get a sort of narrative sequence, which I bet you 99% of the audience isn't willing to do for themselves. So to that extent, whether or not it's a play is debatable, but I think it is essential theatrical viewing.
David, was it a play for you?
I think it probably was just about a play, because I think beneath all the reportage and beneath the conjecture about what happened behind closed doors, all that stuff is invented by Hare in much the same way that Bob Woodward invents dialogue in his two books on the Bush administration, most notably the second one, Plan of Attack. I think underneath that you do get a play, because what Hare has set up, is a tragic hero. Basically, this is a play about Colin Powell, it seems to me, although the principal characters are Bush and Blair. Powell is set up as this kind of heroic person that believed in the necessity of war, wanted war only on the terms of it being allowed under international law. He's trying to move the Bush administration towards that, gets stymied and falls like a tragic hero. That seems to me to be sort of percolating through what is a piece of documentary theatre rather than a play.
Charlie, do you agree with that?
Yes, absolutely. I think the Colin Powell character is fascinating, but I think the thing that really makes it a play for me is that it's just highly entertaining. It's very funny. The performances are just a hint caricatured, but with a light touch, I think. And so it's often, it was the funniest portrayal of Tony Blair I've ever seen, of that sort of, desperate to retain his moral righteousness while also being in a sweaty panic that he's going to be found out at last. Bush becomes a much more interesting character than any of us imagined, in that he's not the idiot that he's normally portrayed, particularly by left-wing playwrights, but actually very clever at using silence to shape his own will and waiting for other people to put their foot in it, and you know, really sort of canny politician. And what I found wonderful about it, and I absolutely agree with Matt, no one could have followed this process through the press and had such a clear view of it in 3 hours. But also, it is theatre because it absolutely grips you. I was absolutely gripped throughout and amused, and actually at times moved, particularly by the final speech where an Iraqi talks about what it's meant to him.
But don't you think that the best pieces are actually written by Hare, and that makes you feel... would be better if it was more completely a play?
No, I don't. I think I no, because then I think one of the things that I think we all valued about it was we felt we were getting a fair and comprehensive picture, and I think that use of the documentary stuff and the verbatim stuff gives you that. But and I also think it's amazing the way he slides seamlessly in and out, and I certainly wasn't aware, you know, consciously thinking, well, this is public and this is made up, or this is real and this isn't.
But do you think... Sorry, Damien.
I think that faction, as it became known about 10 years ago, the sort of eliding of fact and fiction, is a really problematic area, but for reasons I'm not sure I can fully articulate here, it didn't bother me. You know, there is a programme note which makes absolutely clear that the public statements are verbatim, the rest is fiction. Because it's such recent history, nothing dates so much as the recent past, but because we are all conversant with chunks of this, it gives you, the audience, an analytical edge on what it is that you're seeing, and you are able to sort of see through that faction blur. And it does, as Charlie says, it does actually provide an extraordinarily entertaining look at not only what happened, but also a chance to reflect on how each of us felt about the events of the last 3 years.
Yes, although the presentation of Blair, which you say is funny, certainly is, but his supporters might think was unfair because it is funny. Matt, I think you seem to be approving of the presentation of Bush as someone who we might have underestimated. Do you think?
Well, for me it was actually fascinating because there was a slight disjuncture really between the presentation of Bush, which it seemed to me David Hare, perhaps because one assumes David Hare is going to make a patsy out of Bush, he absolutely goes the other direction. And I thought, I mean, first of all, if I were George W. Bush, I would be immensely flattered to be played by Alex Jennings. Not that I think the real George W. Bush will give a fig one way or the other, but the fact is he does, as Charlie said, suggest a sort of wiliness and steeliness and an incredible capacity to use silence. He'll say nothing, and then he'll say the single word, yeah. And whereas you might think, oh, that's just a sort of jape at his inarticulacy, in fact, it becomes quite chilling, because in that yeah is communicated an enormous amount. And actually, on the basis of this play, for the first time, I understood how George W. Bush became president, and I also understood how he will become president again on the 2nd of November.
Oh, that's very sad news. Thank you. But he also seemed to be completely dependent on Condoleezza Rice, though, didn't he?
Yes, I have to say, that I thought was the one big performance gaffe in the production. I mean, I find Condoleezza Rice absolutely fascinating, and the one thing she communicates on television when she was with the 9/11 Commission and all that is this kind of preternatural poise that nothing will disturb. And this actress was sort of slouchy and lots of hands on her hips, and she was kind of like a chick. And I thought, no, there's a kind of impassivity that I didn't think she quite got, but, you know, so what? I mean, what's interesting about almost all the performances is virtually no one really suggests who they're playing physically or really even that much vocally. I mean, Alex Jennings doesn't really at all. But they manage to conjure up something else. Yeah. They conjure up an essence.
Well, the exception to that is Ian Mitchell, whose Jack Straw is absolutely uncanny. You close your eyes and you go, that is Jack Straw. But yes, I think that the suggestion of character and performance. Nick Farrell doesn't look particularly like Tony Blair, but he has got that same... they've all done the work. Yeah. They've all done the body language work. You can see it. You see the shiftiness. You see the slight sanctimony of the head on one side as we're making a public statement, which is gleaned from Thatcher's work with Tim Bell. You see all of that, and that's enough to place everybody.
Yeah. It is. I think Essences is exactly right. They seem to get to the heart of the characters they play.
It would have been disastrous if they'd done a Dead Ringers, wouldn't it? Because people would have been simply laughing in recognition rather than listening to... I thought they got the balance very, very well, in fact.
I think the other thing that makes it a play, to go back to what we were talking about earlier, is, and I think it's Hare's great quality as a writer, is that he's terribly good at writing people he's unsympathetic to and giving them a fair crack at the whip. And it seems to me that that is the mark of a dramatist, to be able to get inside people's heads who he disagrees with. And in fact, the people he disagrees with are often more persuasive than those he does. And there's an almost Shavian quality to that. I mean, he really likes debate for the sake of it. And he'll give the opposition. And I think, you know, my former editor, Charles Moore, went, and I expected he'd loathed it. And he was bowled over by it. And it's a play. It's been very cleverly done. It's very topical. It's urgent. It doesn't fudge any issues, but it's not tendentious. And we've seen so many crap Iraq plays. I mean, we've had Embedded in particular. I just thought was sort of, you know, to seeing those two in the same week, that Tim Robbins play, which is like a sort of adolescent review, and then Hare, who's so in command of his material, and just, it just wipes the floor with the opposition, really.
I think it's interesting what you say about Charles Morsing. It reminds me of the fact that The Guardian did an almost spoiler operation where they sent in virtually seemingly every commentator they've ever had in the newspaper to the first preview. But their responses were very, very interesting because, of course, without wishing to say, oh, we're theatre critics and we know how to do it, actually, their responses seemed to me extraordinarily naive. And and those that were against the war seemed almost cross that David Hare had deigned to actually give George Bush the time of day, and as for making him, you know, a person with any kind of weight, they seem to be wagging their fingers and saying this was an error on his part, which seems to me to be a fundamental misunderstanding of what's going on. This isn't about I present my paper in which I bolster up my point of view. He is actually being a dramatist, and maybe he is over-egging the opposition pudding by giving too much weight to the characters he deems to be the bad guys, but it does then give you something to chew on as an audience. Yeah.
There's also the delightful coincidence in those Guardian previews of the piece is that Polly Toynbee and Anne Widdecombe sort of ended up in bed together, taking exactly the same view of the play, you know, and hating it. And seeing those two, I mean, two of the most monstrous women in England, as far as I'm concerned, agreeing with each other, I thought was wonderful.
Well, we don't necessarily all agree with everything. But those speeches which were made anonymously, which were not given to a character, don't you think those were David Hare writing his essay, putting words which were very well written, in fact. Some of those pieces were the best parts of the play, I thought. Those did seem like essays rather than parts of a play, and I would have liked to have seen those integrated into a character.
I agree. I found that Charlie mentioned how moving the last speech was, and I seriously resented how moving that last speech was, because I thought that absolutely was a case of, right, now then, you've watched the play, and now I'll tell you what I think. And I sort of wish that it hadn't been there and that it had been implicit, because really, that's the only point at which he fully reveals his hand. And yes, there's an argument for saying, of course you should have that, because that's a speech by an Iraqi exile talking about what happened to his country. So that viewpoint needs to be in the mix somewhere. But it absolutely did feel like this is the playwright's statement. And those earlier speeches do take that perspective, but somehow keep it going, because their movement within the play is to tie things together. The last speech, it felt like underlined in red felt tip here.
Yeah, the last speech, I have to say, didn't really work for me. It seemed a case of too little, too late, and I almost wish that if that point of view were going to be, you know, absorbed into the spectrum of opinion, it had been refracted perhaps a bit more subtly. Mm. But, you know, you have to reflect on how this play was put together. I mean, interestingly, as we all know, Nicholas Heitner announced the desire to do this play before David Hare had written a word. You know, very different from, for instance, a somewhat comparable play, I suppose, like Democracy by Michael Frayn, where presumably Michael Frayn wrote it in his own time to his own timetable, rather than it being done for a public event as part of a Travelex £10 season. And so I suppose what David Hare hasn't had time to do, and this isn't meant as a fault, is he hasn't really found a kind of abiding metaphor for the play the way Michael Frayn was able to with Democracy. You know, you have this country becoming, this divided country, Germany, becoming whole as the people involved are themselves divided. Well, that's very clever. And, you know, David Hare hasn't sort of taken that leap, but it's a different sort of experience.
Material,
yeah.
David talked about Colin Powell as a tragic hero, almost a Shakespearean hero. Did you feel that about him?
I did, although...
Do you think that is true, or is that Hare-ish?
Well, I have to say, it certainly surprised me. You know, I'd never really thought of Colin Powell being quite at arm's length from his own administration to that degree. And there's a bit at the end where he's carrying on about the right-wing nutcases in the White House. And I actually came away from this play thinking, if he were at odds with his own administration to that degree, why hasn't he resigned?
Yes,
it doesn't quite work. Does
it's almost a little too much.
It's
very theatrically
drama
invigorating.
Drama is conflict. So this is
And it sort of sharpens the focus very cleverly.
Yeah, I don't think Colin Powell is quite the
firebrand.
The firebrand and the heroic figure he's presented as.
But then the time in which he can put his point of view most vigorously is in a private conversation with Bush and Condoleezza Rice, which of course is not recorded. So there you have Hare has carte blanche, hasn't he?
Yes, although he did say in this front row interview that he and Nicholas Heitner did with Mark Lawson that a lot of those private conversations are based on patterns of speech that he either gleaned, well, I doubt directly, but from either reportage or from interviews with people close to the sources. He made a rather cryptic comment where he said on front row, he said that there are a lot of people who will talk to playwrights who won't talk to journalists.
Did the play change anyone's point of view about the war?
No, it didn't. My view was always very mixed, you know, in a dreadful kind of fence-sittery way, and actually my position shifted during the campaign, and it didn't make me go, oh good heavens, I'd never understood that, but the play absolutely did make me understand the finer points.
It didn't change my point of view about the war at all, but I'll tell you, it made me change my perspective on Bush. I mean, if anything, I thought there's something even scarier than I had envisioned about somebody who feels that he has a God-given mandate for anything, really, for anything, because he's got divine right.
Yes, I think that's something perhaps we should go back to, this notion of fundamentalism, the parallel born-again fundamentalism in America with the Muslim fundamentalism reflecting a similar mindset, in fact. Did you think...
I almost wish the play had pointed that up.
Yes, I was going to ask you if you thought it was enough.
Because that's so interesting, actually. Yeah. You know, opposites attract in this peculiar way.
Yeah.
And Hare could go further with that. Maybe he will on some other occasion.
The Graydon Carter book on the Bush administration, which is a kind of shed load of statistics.
lots of bullet points.
Basically it's a collection of bullet points about, you know, percentage of the population that do this, that and the other. I can't quote you the actual statistic, but you know, the percentage of Americans that is born again is really, it's really instructive, and that point about the duality of those two forms of fundamentalism is completely fascinating, plus the statistic that is in this play, which is that 70%, right at the end of the play, it's pointed out that 70% of Americans still believe that there's a direct link between Saddam Hussein and Osama bin Laden. And you think, well, if that's the case, Bush is back in on November 2nd, quite definitely.
I think they mentioned, I think he actually mentions the number of born-agains, and I think it's something over 50% in the play. I think that's mentioned. I may be entirely wrong. I haven't got the text with me, but I think that's absolutely right. The play would have been, that would have given it the structure, wouldn't it, that you were talking about that Democracy had, if he'd done that a little more. But on the other hand, you can't do everything in a play, and I think, you know, this is the first serious artistic response to this, isn't it? And it's a bloody good first draft.
And I have to, say something that we haven't talked about, and has been mysteriously absent from a lot of the reviews, which have been so busy discussing the content they've not discussed anything else, which is just how good this production is. You know, very little happens. Christopher Oram's design is very clean and very simple. There's a kind of dove grey circular floor, 22 beautiful dining chairs on the upper rim of the set. There's a couple of suggestions of location that appear at the back of the set. There's an image of the White House. There's an image of Patagonia where Hans Blix is walking with his wife.
He said they made him look a little silly, but then they could murder you on stage, he said, which was rather nice.
But even within that, it has immense clarity and it's fantastically fleet-footed. You know, we get 3 hours to go through 3 years of fantastically detailed back and forthing, and in different locations in different countries. And I suspect that whilst David Hare is a consummate playwright, Nick Heitner must have had a lot to do with the editing and the filleting and the staging of that material. It's incredibly impressive.
Yes, it's got such elan, hasn't it? It's just
So are we at the beginning of a new era of political writing in this country, do you think?
Well, it seems to be getting more sophisticated. I mean, if you compare this to the, in my view, dreadful Madness of George W. a few years ago, which was barely worth discussing, but was treated much more seriously, I think, than it would have been if there had been other things around at the time, this is certainly a quantum leap forward.
It's a marker, isn't it? Mm. And I don't think people are going to take tendentious agitprop after this. You know, they're going to want proper plays rather than than just a confirmation of what the audience thinks.
Well, thank you very much. That seems very positive on the whole. So thank you, David, Matt, and Charles.